Shakaparishnigrahina, who was helping Lord Indra, Vishnana, by Lord Vishnu, Manyuna, with anger, Shoka, Dittena, kindled by lamentation, Jwalanti, burning. Paryat Chintayat, thought. Translation. Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, just to help Indra, Lord Vishnu killed the two brothers, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. Because of their being killed, their mother, Diti, overwhelmed with lamentation and anger, contemplated as follows. This verse is the first of a series of answers given by Maharaj Pariksit in appreciation, given by Shukadeva Goswami in appreciation of Maharaj Pariksit's very condensed questions regarding the essential topics of the introductory verses of this chapter. Since Maharaj Pariksit inquired very respectfully and very briefly, meaning getting right to the essence of what's being the significance conveyed in the introductory verses, Maharaj Pariksit, very inspired, very encouraged by Maharaj Pariksit's eagerness to get to the essence of the lessons imparted in this chapter, was very inspired to respond by this series of verses, and I'll read through them because we go through a few before there's a purport. Next verse. This is actually Ditti's thoughts. This is what she's thinking. Lord Indra, who is very much fond of sense gratification, has killed the two brothers, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, which is Diti's own sons, her twin sons, by means of Lord Vishnu. Therefore Indra is cruel, hard-hearted, and sinful. When will I, having killed him, rest with a pacified mind? You can see the attitude that's betrayed in the words of these thoughts. When dead, the bodies of all rulers, known as kings and great leaders, will be transformed into worms, stool, or ashes. If one enviously kills others for the protection of such a body, does he actually know the true interest of life? Certainly he does not. For if one is envious of other entities, he surely goes to hell. Diti thought, continued to think, Indra considers his body eternal, and thus he has become unrestrained. I therefore wish to have a son who can remove Indra's madness, meaning kill him. Let me adopt some means to help me in this. Purport by His Divine Grace, Sisi Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. One who is in the bodily conception of life is compared in the Shastras to animals like cows and asses. Diti wanted to punish Indra, who had become like a lower animal. bear in mind that these verses of Shukadeva Goswami are not in and of themselves revealing the absolute truth. He's revealing Ditti's mentality by revealing her thoughts. And her mentality is what Shukadeva Goswami wanted to hear about, and what Maharaj Pariksit wanted to hear about. So, Ditti, she's very interested in the way she's thinking. She was thinking that just to help Indra, Lord Vishnu killed the two brothers, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. That's really not factual. Lord Vishnu appeared to kill Hiranyakashipu because, as foretold by that ominous voice, as soon as that demon tries to kill his second son, Kalak, I will appear to annihilate him. So it wasn't to help him. It was actually to protect Pallad. That was the first fallacy in your thinking. So Ditti, overwhelmed with lamentation and anger due to losing her sons, her mentality became very bewildered. And then the next verse, it becomes more obvious. Lord Indra, who's very fond of sense gratification, has killed the two brothers, Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyakashipu. Lord Indra did not kill them. Lord Vishnu killed them. So it's very interesting to see how she's thinking. Because this chapter is Maharaj Pariksit's answers to Shukadeva Goswami's questions. The initial question was, how is it that Ditti, who generally gave birth to the demons, whereas Aditi generally gave birth to demigods, and Lord Balaram, but how is it that her 49 sons, who should have been demons, became demigods? And also, remember, as the grandson of Ditti was Prahlad Maharaj, in whose family took birth Bali Maharaj, who was the recipient of Vamana's mercy, born with Ditti. So you see an interaction here of the divine and the demoniac mentalities taking advantage of different thought processes in the characters' minds. It's interesting to see how Ditti, because of her anger and lamentation at losing her sons, to the hands of Lord Vishnu, such a benediction, such a blessing for me. But she's very aggrieved, and she's blaming Indra here for killing her sons, even though Indra had little to do with it. Vishnu did it. And this betrays the mentality of the conditioned mind, who is so prone to blame others and blame circumstances for our own suffering. And the thoughts of Ditti make it very clear how the conditioned mind works. What is really, ultimately, the work of the Lord in our lives, in hearts, and relationships? We superficially attribute to being due to other jivas or circumstances and environment. And we tend to play victim. We tend to blame. And in this way, perpetuate the cycle of karma, meaning actions work upon us and our reactions perpetuates the cycle of karma, action and reaction, karma, rotating us continually in the wheel of samsara. And continues our victimhood to the unwanted miseries of birth, death, disease, and old age. But really, our deepest issues of duality, meaning attachment and hate, and the fear that naturally accompany those thoughts of duality, are not at all with the people we identify them with, but are actually with Krishna. So Krishna consciousness means adjusting our vision from the darkness of the light eclipsed by our own false ego to the light of Vasudeva, the illuminating power of the Lord. And Krishna consciousness also means adjusting our relationships with others, with circumstances, with the environment. Understanding nature to be a form of the Lord. His energy is really a chinta bheda, a bheda tattva, separate and distinct from him, but simultaneously one with him. So the Lord is working in the lives of everyone and everything through his delegated energy, known as Mahamaya, inasmuch as our attitude is averse to the surrender and service to the Lord. And that same energy in Mahamaya, who is personified as Durga, and is for some reason worshipped by some, desiring material benefits, but is really not the kind of personality who would evoke love from the hearts of a living entity. Durga, although a great personality, rides a beast of prey, a tiger, carrying sword, implements of destruction, sword to sever the heads of those who worship her. Not really liking their kind of worship, their kind of attitude. And the trident, designating the threefold miseries with which she is always inflicting punishments upon living entities. But she is actually just a reflection of Yogamaya, the divine energy. And it's the same energy. And Srila Prabhupada cites the example of electricity, which can serve to heat or to cool according to how it's wired. If electricity is wired to a heater, it gives warmth. If wired to a refrigerator, it cools, but it's the same energy with different features, different faces. So the Lord's own inseparable energy has different faces, different features, which reveal themselves according to our own attitude. Whatever attitude we convey to the Lord's energy determines whether she will reveal herself as Durga, meaning the threefold miseries, and perpetuation of the cycle of samsara with the actions and reactions which we ourselves perpetuate by our own attitudes and thoughts and reactions to the actions that come into our lives, or by a simple adjustment of consciousness to seeing everything and everyone that comes into our lives as a teacher from whom we have so much to learn. In the 11th canto, when King Yadu came across that avadut, because the king was very wise, he could understand that this avadut was an enlightened soul. And he asked him, how have you achieved such a state of divine consciousness? And the Yamadut replied, because they have so many gurus. And he began listing them, beginning with the earth, who teaches forbearance. You see on the surface of the earth these huge militant forces that gather with all their armaments and infantry and cavalry and armored divisions and airborne divisions and just go at it with one another and cover these huge battlefields with blood and carnage. And the earth is so forbearing. And she just, you know, processes all this fruit of bitterness and envy and recycles it into new growth, new opportunities. And then he went on, you know, through the 24, the wind, the sky, the young girl, the prostitute, Pingala, the wasp. What do you learn from a wasp? This insect was being killed by a wasp, was meditating on the wasp, being so racked with fear. All that little insect could think about was the wasp. And therefore that insect became a wasp in its next life. Hiranyakashipu is likened to a wasp. But what was Prahlad thinking when Hiranyakashipu was trying to kill him in so many ways? He was thinking of Krishna. And what came into their relationship? The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who liberated Hiranyakashipu and bestowed and revealed so much of his, because, you know, Lord Nrisimhadev, you know, we like to worship because some people like, you know, blood and gory scenes of, but others, they revere the half-man, half-lion incarnation, Lord Nrisimha, because he's so protective of the gentle, the innocent, the weak, the humble, the devoted. And therefore he naturally evokes so much love and surrender from our hardened hearts. So the energy of the Lord, which as Mahamaya works through natural events and circumstances, some very traumatic, some very nurturing, but all having the same desire in mind, that same energy which works as Mahamaya and influences others to come into our lives to praise us or insult us or encourage us or discourage us or offer so many things, but and we become like puppets and just react to the actions. But we do have free will. The Lord has imparted his parts and parcels with free will, which is a necessary factor in love. That we don't have to react to everything that comes into our lives as if we're helpless victims in the hands of material energy. We have the free will to respond in the devotional way, thinking that whatever comes is ultimately under the control of Krishna, who is so kind and loving and orchestrating everything to bring his lost flock back to the shelter of this eternal abode of loving pastimes. So that was very clearly perceived and revealed to us in the Srimad Bhagavatam by Vidura, the great prophet and well-wisher of Duryodhana, who is continually trying to inspire him to give up your attachment. I mean, Dhritarashtra, give up your attachment to this offense-personified son, Duryodhana, which is just destroying a whole dynasty. And Dhritarashtra knew he was right, but he was very attached. So the last episode in this long sequence of events was when Duryodhana could not tolerate anymore. Who asked for his advice, the son of the kept mistress? Drive him out of the palace, leaving him only with his life. So Vidura was hurt. He was pained that he was just trying to serve as the well-wisher of the family for which he was exiled. But he was also very grateful because he saw that the Lord's one energy was functioning as Mahamaya because of Duryodhana's aversion to the Lord. And Mahamaya, Yogamaya, for Vidura, liberating him from that family bondage and enslavement in the dynasty, which is being polluted by the envious mentality of Duryodhana. He saw it as a gate, as a doorway opening, that he could just dedicate his life to going on pilgrimage and wander throughout all the world, perceiving the various infinite aspects of Krishna's wonder in the environment and what it had to teach him about Krishna and direct him towards Krishna. So same energy. And Vidura saw it clearly, inspiring Duryodhana to vent his wrath more vehemently. Which was his, for Vidura, liberation. It was his opportunity. He had done his best. And he saw that Krishna was now inspiring him to leave this abusive situation. And how do we know the difference? When to forbear, when to leave. There's a wonderful prayer. It's called the Serenity Prayer, which is a wonderful definition of wisdom. Lord, grant me the serenity to change the things I can, to accept the things I can't, and the wisdom to know the difference. And from where does wisdom come? The three facets of Guru. The Lord above, the Lord who comes into our lives as a spiritual master, and that Lord in the heart, who works his intuition, who speaks his intuition. So the Lord's one energy, which is simultaneously one with him and different in adherence to the philosophy of Chintaveda Veda Doctrine, presents different faces in our lives according to our very attitude towards the Lord's service and our duty to surrender and how Krishna is working for our redemption. At the entrance to the most divine realm of Radhakund is Shivakari, the lake of the guardian Lord Shiva, to that most holy abode. And when the Lord's internal energy, Srimati Radharani, with her divine entourage, was relishing pastimes of Krishna, and suddenly they heard these piteous cries of some innocent creature. And Srimati Radharani turned to her associates. What is this? How is it that such sounds of great distress and fear and anguish are being heard in the most joyous abode of Krishna's pastimes? So she dispatched Lalita to find out what was going on, who found that one she-jackal who had just taken water from Lord Shiva's lake, being spotted by some children who chased after that she-jackal with sticks to torment her. And she ran into a hole seeking shelter. And the children, being very mischievous and very arrogant, started fires at the holes to her home. And the smoke and the heat and the suffocation was tormenting her, and she was screaming piteously. What inspires people to do such things? What inspires people to eat meat? It is nothing but envy. Envy of the lives of others, which has something to teach us about ourselves. So hearing those cries in the abode where only peace and love should prevail, Lalita finding out what was transpiring, chased away those children and took that she-jackal to her mistress, Shivata. And that she-jackal, with tears pouring from her eyes, this is a Brijabasa story, but it's from scripture, fell at the lotus feet of Srimati Radharani, bathing her lotus feet with her own tears. And Sri Radha, the original form of the Lord's energy, her heart melting with compassion, which is her the nature which so deeply imbues her transcendental form, reassured that jackal with the guarantee of her eternal protection and blessed her with service in her loving pastimes with Krishna. And hearing that pastime, Tulsi just began to cry, being so overwhelmed with love and appreciation for the wonderful workings of the Lord's internal energy. And as she was crying and just losing her composure, Rupa Manjari, to comfort her friend, encouraged her to reveal to us more and more the wonderful divine nature and pastimes of Radhakund. So, the Lord so often presents the most essential truths in environments of conflict and contrast. When Maharaj Pariksit, the wonderful king who had such a wonderful birth because Krishna appeared in the womb of Uttara to protect him from the Brahmastra hurled by Ashwatthama, and he saw Krishna in the womb, and that form of the Lord, that beauty, that protection, that mercy, that kindness captivated his heart, granting him the name Pariksit Inquirer. He was looking at everyone and everything as to detect an indication how to find that person again. His birth was wonderful. His life was wonderful. His death was wonderful. So when he was controlling his kingdom, and he was horrified to find a person dressed as a king beating the legs of a bull. And this was just after that bull, the emblem of religion, wandering throughout the land, came across cow, the symbol of the earth, who is herself a goddess, who is the most blessed planet in creation, the only one in the universe where Lord Krishna is blessed. Her heart with a touch of his bare feet. Krishna appears in his various avatars on other planets, but he wears sandals. Only on Earth is he obliged to walk barefoot because he identifies himself with the herdsman of gopas. Such a humble Lord is Krishna. And so blessed is the Earth to be marked with the impressions of his bare lotus feet. So, anyway, the cow is a representative of the earth, our mother. The bull is a representative of God, our Father. And when they were conversing, and the bull was so concerned that the cow was in a pale condition, he said, "Why are you lamenting? Is it because the population of the earth is not following religious principles, or because they're indulging in unrestricted pleasures of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending without following regulations, regulative principles?" Which follows the natural consequences of violations of the four legs of Dharma, the legs of the bull, austerity, truthfulness, cleanliness, mercy, which are violated by meat-eating, illicit sex, intoxication, and gambling. Is this why you're so aggrieved? Or have you lost your calf? So when Dharma was inquiring from Bhumi, uprights, first appeared the Shudra, lower than Shudra, Bharga, but dressed as a king, meaning the personification of hypocrisy, Kali. And he began beating the bull as he was trying to discern the reason for the aggrievement in the cow. And this Kali had already destroyed three of Dharma's legs and was standing on one only, the leg of truthfulness, which is beginning to fail, when upright is Maharaj Pritchett on his beautiful horse with sword in his hand. And he was appalled. He could not imagine that such a thing could transpire in his kingdom. And he challenged that. He called him a Shudra. Who are you, posing as a king but acting like a Shudra? A little complimentary, because a Shudra would never do such a thing. Acting like a demon, really. But culture king Maharaj Pritchett addressed him as a Shudra. Performing this heinous act, destroying the reputation of my illustrious forefathers and their dynasty. And then he turned to the bull. He was actually seeking a statement of accusation so that he could punish the miscreant. And Maharaj Pritchett was astounded at the answer of the bull to his question, who has done this? It was obvious who had done that. But the bull answered, I can't really say who has put me in such a difficult situation of such suffering. I can't really say, because I am bewildered by the opinions of the various theoretical philosophers. So the bull, who was Dharma, speaking as a devotee, was alluding to the fact that without the sanction of the Lord, no one can inflict any misery or impart any pleasure on anyone. So he was indicating that Kali is merely instrumental. And then Dharma expressed, answering Maharaj Pariksit's questions according to the philosophy of the different theoretical gyanis, said, some say that our suffering is due to superhuman powers. Some say it's according to our own self. Some say it's karma. Some say it's nature. My dear king, judge for yourself who the real culprit is. And it's interesting that Dharma did not answer that it's Krishna who is aware of the suffering to come upon me. Because Krishna is not directly responsible for our suffering. Nor did he say that it's Krishna's deputed Maya Shakti, which acts according to our own fruit of activities. And he didn't say it was the Lord's mercy. Because he wanted the king to take action. If he just said, this is Krishna's mercy, then that would kind of discourage the king from punishing the miscreant. So Dharma wanted to encourage the king and protect religious principles and warding off the advent of the age of Kali as long as possible. So this teaches, this bull, Dharma, is teaching us how to see things holistically. That ultimately nothing can happen without the will, or at least the sanction of the Lord. We don't want to say it's Krishna's will, because Krishna does not will that we be indifferent or antagonistic. He allows us to misuse our free will, because ultimately by suffering the consequences
will begin to inquire, why am I suffering? And what is the means to become free? Nor did Dharma reply that this is just Krishna's mercy that I'm being assaulted like this. He knew it was Krishna's mercy, but he wanted to encourage the king in his service of granting protection. So he didn't say that. He told the king to judge for himself and act accordingly. And then the king realized that this is no ordinary bull and cow. This is the archetypal bull and cow. Dharma and Bhumi are archetypal parents, representative of our true divine mother and father. Krishna is the father of all seed-giving living entities. Srimati Radharani is the mother of devotion and the mother of creation, the divine mother. So, the king, Maharaj Parishya, responded to Dharma that you know religious principles, and one who thinks the perpetrator of injustice is the cause of his misery is as ignorant as the miscreant himself. And because you're just tolerating all this misery as God sent, I can understand that you are some exalted devotee. So then he arrested Kali. But then, when he was just ready to sever his head, Kali surrendered. He said, please grant me some kind of shelter. And he said, okay, you can live wherever there's meat eating, illicit sex, intoxication, and gambling. Now these are the blatant places where Kali can live. But meat eating doesn't just refer to eating the flesh of other living entities. It means any kind of cruelty, any lack of kindness to some subtly or grosser degree is malice, which is nothing but the expression of our original enemy, our own envy of Krishna. So Kali said, but there is no such place in your kingdom where these things happen. So you didn't give me shelter because you gave me a place that doesn't exist. Because under the protection of such a great soul as Maharaj Krishna, these things, and Kali had not really yet entered. He couldn't. Actually, Krishna's Leela extended a little bit beyond what would normally be, by astrological calculations, the close of the Dwapara Age, and a little bit into the, like 25 years into the, what would normally, by astrological calculations, be the advent of Kali. But Kali couldn't enter as long as Krishna's lotus feet blessed the surface of the earth. Krishna had no place. When Krishna left, then Maharaj Pariksit, as his representative, was keeping Kali outside of the universe. But then, when Maharaj Pariksit's pastimes reached the stage that he would identify Kali before leaving, he gave Kali the benediction that you can reside wherever there is hoarding of gold, meaning selfishness. Selfishness, the manifestation of false ego, with its ignorance of bodily identification, is the root cause of all our sufferings, because it's what leads us away from Krishna. Not that anything can ever be apart from Krishna, but our own consciousness, our own thoughts, can create a world of darkness, which appears to be real, but is not real in a substantive sense of being eternal. Thank God. But this world is meant not to punish the living entities for their envious mentality, and not to award them enjoyment, because it doesn't do very well either. The enjoyments here are definitely not substantial. And the punishment is not the Lord's will. Our redemption is His will. So the world is perfectly designed to correct our envious mentality, to adjust our deviant perception and thoughts, into understanding that Krishna is working as guru, as one who comes to give siksha and diksha and the Lord in the heart and the Lord above. And if we actually seek the wisdom that the Lord is trying to impart upon our darkened eyes and darkened hearts, then everything reveals a different face. That which is external energy and takes us away from the Lord reveals her actual feature as Yogamaya, who affects the union, the communion of the individual soul with Krishna, and redirects our vision from seeking pleasure in the darkness to seeking shelter in the light. So, to reinforce the concept that our real issues are not with those jivas or those circumstances or those calamities that come into our lives, but these are just aspects, just the fructification of what stems from our initial misuse of our independence to turn away from Krishna rather than to serve Krishna. Of course, we don't emphasize service to Krishna because that is also arrogant, because Krishna is really only served by Srimati Radharani and Lord Balaram. Everyone else is servant of the servant of the servant. There's only two people who really claim to be servant of Krishna. That is Srimati Radharani in the realm of Madhurya and Lord Balaram in the four different rasas, the four other primary rasas. Everyone else is servant of the servant of the servant. So, the real issues that torment our minds are not with other jivas. Those other jivas, those circumstances, those natural calamities and disturbance and arrangements are just the face of either our issues with God, or if we look at it in a more devotional, humble way, our teachers come to teach us something about the condition of our own hearts. If someone comes and says something, I don't know, I guess in modern terminology, they use terms like pushing buttons. Like somebody comes and pushes your buttons. I guess that means they get you angry or insulted. Is that what it means? So that means you become like a computer, that you're just reacting to how you're programmed. That's not what the jiva is meant to be, a computer or a robot who just gets programmed by something extraneous to himself, having nothing to do with his own heart's desire. That is not the goal and purpose of human life.